So what's up, family? What's up, Kiko? So y'all all know me as Kiko, but my name is Nicholas Williams, and I'm an addict. Yeah. I know people I've known my whole life that don't realize that. But tonight I'm just trying to be honest, man. And yeah, this is my story. This has nothing to do with Kiko, or this is Nicholas Williams' story. I was born in Austin. We immediately moved to Somerville, Texas. I don't know if any of y'all know anything about that, but it's pretty small. And, you know, I was there a couple years, and we ended up in the bustling metropolis of Brenham. I don't know if you know anything about that, but it's about as small. But yeah, I was raised by two very loving parents. Like, my story does not have a whole lot of trauma, well, self-inflicted trauma, but yeah, my parents raised me very, very, I guess, sheltered. You know, like, for most of my life, up until I was a teenager and kind of decided to strike out on my own, I remember my mom, like, hiding my eyes whenever there was, like, a sex scene that came on the show. I mean, it was so bad that, like, when I was 14 years old and I had a girlfriend and she was like, so do you want to have sex? I was like, yeah. She was like, well, take off your clothes. I was like, what do you mean? I have to be naked? And, yeah, and so... So, like, it was around then when I realized exactly how sheltered I had been, you know? And, but, yeah, like, I mean, I was one of the few friends I had that my parents didn't get divorced. You know, they may not have had the healthiest relationship. I remember them fighting a lot. But I remember they always loved me, man. Like, I know, like, without a doubt, even when I was a teenager and I, you know, went through the I hate you phase, there was not a day that I'd ever doubted my parents' love for me, and I'm grateful for that, man. But, so, you know, like, when I got to, you know, school age, whatever age that is, I don't really remember, I did drugs. But yeah, so when I started school, I was in the gifted and talented program. Like, I know my grandma still to this day dotes about how smart I was, and it scares the shit out of me seeing my kid being so smart, you know, because like everything that she tells me that I was like, I see him being like, and I'm so proud and so unbelievably afraid at the same time. But yeah, like, my parents, they decided when I was, I don't know, probably about in third grade, that I needed to be put on Ritalin, because the school told them that, because I acted out. I know my fiance will tell you I like to tap, and I like to make noises, and I like to move around a lot, and apparently that's ADD, and, you know, like, and it, I guess it helped, like, it helped stop the tapping, but I don't think it really helped with the school. Like, it kind of, like, made me hate school more, because it was just something else that I had to do that I did not care for. And I just, I progressively, as far as school goes, I can't believe I made it to high school. You know, I was very, very bad at doing homework. Like, they would give me the homework, and I would take it home, and it would be in my backpack, and I would tell my parents I didn't have homework, and then I wouldn't do the homework, and I would go back to school with the homework being undone, and it was just like a steady downhill cycle of not doing what I'm supposed to do from an early age. But somehow, my eighth grade year of school, my teachers told my parents he's not going to make it to high school. And I guess maybe in my test taking, doing the finals, I guess I got a good enough grade on my finals to where I did in fact make it to high school. And so all of a sudden my parents had signed me up for summer school, and it changed from having to take, you know, my core classes that I have to take to I have to take some classes in summer school because we've already paid for it. So what do you, you know, and I got to take art and creative problem solving and like classes that were, you know, like affected me down the road when I discovered that, hey, I kind of like doing that art shit, you know. But yeah, so I got into high school, and my freshman year, I I always made friends with everybody. I mean, I'm friends with almost everybody in this room. Like, I like to think of myself as a people person. But when I was in high school, I made friends with the older kids, you know, the cool kids, and the kids that were drinking and doing drugs, you know. And I can remember the first time I got drunk, I was 14 years old at a party, and they got me really drunk, and they were like, let's make a movie. And I was like, all right, yeah, let's make a movie. What kind of movie? They're like, well, you're going to be a gay sailor, prostitute, and you're trying... And, you know, like, I'm so hopeful that that video doesn't pop up on YouTube someday. Because, you know, and it was like, you know, three senior girls and then me, and I'm wearing Daisy Dukes and, like, a little tied-off shirt in the front. And the only thing that distinguished that I was a sailor prostitute was I had a little sailor hat on. And it was basically, I got turned down for offering my services to these girls is what it came down to. And I mean, like, you know, at the time I was like, yes, man, this is awesome. I'm accepted. And like, I'm free, you know? And I continued hanging out with these friends, and it was like the same group of friends that, we were riding around one day. They're like, well, do you smoke pot? And I was like, yeah, I smoke pot. They're like, well, we got a joint. And so, like, I smoked my first joint, and I was in the back of a little Mitsubishi Eclipse, and I remember getting out, and when I got out, I was, like, stepping out of it like this, and I remember looking down at my feet, and I was, like, I felt like I was 10 feet tall, and it was, like, it was the only time in my life I've literally felt 10 feet tall and bulletproof, and we were at McDonald's, and it was the three of us, and we split a Happy Meal, and, like, I remember very clearly, like, we're sitting at a table where there was no bench on one side, and so I'm sitting on my knees, high as shit, not even realizing this is a weird situation. And but I realized at that time that I loved pot, man. Like, I didn't really care for alcohol. Like, my whole, like, I mean, I drank when I was in high school because that's what my friends did, but I really didn't care for alcohol. And that affected me later when I came into the program because I had a hard time agreeing with that I was an alcoholic, you know, because I didn't like alcohol. I don't like alcohol. To this day, I don't like alcohol, but I will gladly say that I'm an alcoholic if that's what helps me get over whatever the fuck it is that's wrong with me. But, yeah, so, like, I mean, when I was 13 years old, I discovered guitar, and I decided that that's what I was going to do with my life, you know, like, I didn't want a plan B, I ended up dropping out of high school, and I was focused on music, man, and that was so stupid, I like to think I'm pretty decent at making music, but... at the time, I wish I could go back and tell myself, hey, you know, have one more option, you know? you know, and like, I made it a conscious decision as part of my recovery to not even bother with music right now, you know? Like, I feel like it's still in me, but I feel like I have other things that are much more imperative that I need to take care of, you know, myself, my son, my fiance, my life, like, it can stand to wait another couple years before I get back into my music. But it was like, you know, when I found the guitar, it was like I found, you know, how when I got drunk that first time, it felt like, yes, this is the release I've been looking for. I found that with music, man. And, like, and I mean, like, I don't look back on it with any regret because, like, I was very passionate about it, and I feel like today I can associate the passion that I have with being sober with that passion that I have for music, which I think is kind of cool. But anyway, so I ended up dropping out of high school in 10th grade, I ended up running away when I was 14 or 15, and I was pretty much on the streets for the time I was 14 to 16. And it was like I kind of put my parents in a pretty fucked up spot, man. Like, You know, like, I didn't have any contact with my parents for months at a time. And, like, being a parent now, I cannot imagine how that must have felt, man. But, it, you know, like, when I was 16, I ended up coming home one time, and my mom was like, look, come home, stay home. I will withdraw you from school, get a job. And so I was 16 years old. We had a friend that had a janitorial service that he ran. And my first night I went to work with him, we cleaned like an entire high school. We re-waxed the floor. I don't know if any of y'all have ever done floors, but at 16 years old, waxing and sealing floors is not the career you want. But it was like, you know, like it was a chance to like, to make my mom happy, you know? And it was like, well, fuck, I'm going to do this. Well, the first night I went to work, I called my mom. It was like 20 minutes from my house, and I called my mom, and I was like, hey, mom, I'm on my way home. I know it's late. I just want to let you know I'm on my way home. She's like, okay. And 20 minutes later, we get home, and my parents are gone. And my mom hung up the phone with me and tripped over my dog and broke her ankle and ended up in the hospital after that for months. She ended up developing ARDS. She was a severe diabetic. She ended up developing ARDS, and she was in a medical-induced coma for months. And, you know, they were telling us, like, there's not a very good chance of my mom surviving. And that, you know, being 16 years old, like, fuck me up, man. And so she ends up coming out of it, you know, like, this was in, I don't know, October. By January, February-ish, maybe. I'm not, it's kind of hazy on the details, but sometime in the next 6 months-ish, she ends up coming out of it and staying with my grandparents, and I end up moving up here to Austin and going to school right across the street from my grandma's house and kind of be here to help. And, you know, being that dumb 16-year-old kid, at some point I ran away again, you know, because I thought I was cool, you know, thought it was worth it, man. Thought I had more time with her. And she ended up, you know, like I was back and forth in and out from my parents' house. But when I was I was 17 years old, and I was at home, and I had the flu, and my mom was taking care of me, and my mom ended up getting the flu from taking care of me. Flu turned into pneumonia turned back into ARDS. And then she had bacterial cysts on the shunt where her insulin went in, and she ended up having that bacterial cyst travel up and mess up her heart, mess up her brain. She had a bunch of strokes. It was pretty bad. And so New Year's Eve, I was up here. We were in the hospital, and you know, like I didn't realize the heaviness of the situation. And I was, you know, being a 17-year-old kid, and I was like, man, Dad, I want to go to this rave. You know, I'll come back as soon as this rave is over. It's right down the street, you know. He hadn't told me, like, you know, we're going to pull the plug on your mom in the morning. And, you know, like, I didn't understand it at the time. And he was like, if you go to this rave, I will disown you. And so I had all this animosity towards my dad for a long time after that. But New Year's Day 2001, we pulled the plug on my mom, man. And after that, it was just kind of, you know, before that, I was like the hippie stoner kid that was like, you know, I'm not gonna do anything but weed, man, because weed's natural, man. And you know what I mean? And like after that, it was pretty much I was off to the races, man. I discovered that there was other drugs you could do, and those other drugs, like, I mean, for like my 20s, I would say, you know, out of the 10 years of my 20s, there was years where I slept maybe 40 nights, you know, like, I mean, it started out like I didn't identify it as, you know, like I was going through something. I identified it as I'm fucking young and I'm having fun. You know, I was in a band finally. We were like, you know, like doing small tours around Texas type shit. Like I thought that's what you're supposed to do when you're a fucking rock star. You know, and, you know, that, and yeah, I had friends around this time that just kind of wrote me off because I can't blame them because it had to be like, you know, like I know from the outside looking in, it had to look like I was trying to kill myself. Because it was like, if you had drugs, I was going to do them. I didn't care what drugs they were. I don't care how you, you know. But I always had that, it was always a thing of, I've got standards, you know. Like, when I started doing meth, it wasn't, you know, I'm only going to sniff it and eat it, you know, because I'm classy, you know. And then, you know. And then, you know, after a couple years when I discovered, wait a second, you can take this tube, set it on fire, make it into a pipe. Like, I'm making art now, you know, I'm not doing drugs. Like, you know, and so like, you know, there was always that, the limit, you know, I can't go further than this. And every time I'd get further than that, so it was pretty much, you know, for all my 20s, I had the firm no, I'm never going to shoot up, you know. And like, for my 20s, like, I adhered to that, you know. But this disease is progressive. And, you know, so when I got into my 30s, you know, I mean, for my 20s, all I did was go to jail and play music, you know. That very, very rarely did I miss many shows because I was in jail, but it just so happened that the guys in my band had other bands, and I would pretty much, I didn't plan it, but it just so happened that I'd get arrested whenever he was playing with this band, and I lucked into that. But like, when I got to be about 28, the guy that was the front man for my band, he got busted cooking dope. And he ended up going to prison for 8 years. And for the rest of my 20s, up until not too long ago, you know, it's been since I got sober that I realized, like, this guy didn't take my band from me, you know what I mean? Like, I remember him getting out of prison and me refusing to talk to him because I blamed him for fucking losing the one thing that I had that was great, you know. And I mean, so when I got into my 30s, my dad died probably about 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago, and that was around the time whenever it was like, it got to the point that the standards went out the window, you know. Like, I was getting high with people that didn't smoke it, that didn't, you know, snort it. And it was like, look, you're not going to be able to get high if you don't shoot it up. And it was like, well, I can't do it myself, you know. Like, I'm scared of the needle. I've got tattoos and I got my lip pierced and I'm like this big dude that's afraid of fucking needles. Like, so for the longest time, like, that was my justification for it. I'll do it, but I'm not going to do it myself because, you know, I don't want to turn into that guy that's just shooting up myself, you know? And so, like, I'd have to be hanging around with people that knew what they were doing. And eventually I realized that all those people were druggies too, that they didn't know what they were doing. You know, it wasn't like I was getting high with phlebotomists, you know, like, and it was like, there was only so many times where I was going to let them miss on me that I was going to be like, finally I was like, okay. And I remember sitting in a hotel room with a guy taking a crash course, and the guy's name was Outlaw too. I remember that. And he was like, I don't think it's his real name, but he you know, like, he gave me the lowdown on how to do it. And I wish he wouldn't have. I wish I never would have. I can't say that. I don't want to regret anything. But anyway, so I started shooting a bunch of dope, and you know, like, when my dad died, I didn't think it was going to be anywhere near as dramatic on me as it was when my mom died. But, like, I also wasn't factoring in the fact that, like, my entire life, like, 30 years I had with this man that for a lot of it, like, I thought I hated him. And I know I was at work and I talked to my brother. And he had told me, man, I talked to Dad yesterday, and he sounds more alive than he sounded in years. And the next day, my stepmom calls me, and she says, hey, if you want to say your last words to your dad, you better come quick. And, you know, I went to my boss and I was like, hey, I've got to go. I don't know. It fucked me up, man. Like, we dealt with my, while my mom, I guess I skipped over this part, but while my mom was in the hospital dealing with her demise, my dad had a quintuple bypass. Yeah, five bypass. He had a heart attack and had to have five stents put in his heart while my mom was on her deathbed, you know, and he ended up living 15 more years, something like that. And, you know, my parents were hippies that pretty much, you know, like I didn't, in growing up with my dad, he gave me the lowdown on like what it was really like. And I became like really good friends with him. When I was a teenager, when I was in my early 20s, you know, after he told me he would disown me if I went to this rave, all that, you know, like, I ended up, like, coming to love and respect him like I never thought I would. And so, when we had to deal, like, my dad was a very talkative guy. And when I got the call from my stepmom and she was like, hey, you gotta come say your last words. And we went in the hospital room and he couldn't speak. Like, I wasn't ready for that, man. Like, you know, like, I was expecting to be able to have my last words with my dad and be able to have, like, a last conversation with my dad, you know? And, like, I could see that the lights were on, but, like, he couldn't speak. He had developed pea brain or whatever, where, like, his liver stopped working, and, like, so the bile or urine sits on your brain and like sits on different parts of your brain, and like sometimes it's the part that speaks, sometimes it's other parts. But it was really weird, man. Like, you know, and for like 3 days we sat in this hospital room with him, and he was just silent. And like I seen him recognizing us. I seen him like there with us, and I seen him like trying to figure out, like, why can't I say anything, you know? And, like, one day, like, everybody leaves the room, and I'm like, Dad, I love you. And he sits up and says, I love you. And it was like, that was amazing, man. Like, the last thing I can say, that the last thing both my parents, I remember them saying to me was, I love you, man. And I'm grateful for that. But anyway, so, yeah, I just... If either of those times would have been the wake-up call that I needed, I wouldn't be here talking to you today. My story would be completely different. But I kept going like I thought I knew what I was doing, because, you know, like I decided that, you know, like I was the type of person that I looked at doing drugs as part of my identity, you know. I never thought that I would be able to get sober because, like, I'm the guy that does all the drugs, you know. And like, you know, like it was like there was a part of me that thought the world would fucking stop if I got sober, man. And like, and so February 20, I've got a year and a day sober, by the way, today. Two days from now will make a year that I came in here and I was sitting in your seats. Like, on February 20th of last year, I got arrested with 40 grams of meth and three scales and, you know, all these reasons to be put in prison for a long, long time. And so I spent about a month in jail, and my court-appointed lawyer came to speak to me, and he said... he'd give me a PR bond, and so I PR bonded out. And I PR bonded out the week before Easter. So I went and I had Easter dinner with my family. And my cousin, approached me and she was like, look, I can help you if you want to help. You know, and at the time, like, to be quite honest with you, I was looking at rehab as a way to get out of going to prison, you know? Like, so I said yes, you know? And so later that week when I, you know, because I, of course, I'm an addict, it took me a week to do all the shit I started doing the day I got out, you know? Going and filling out the paperwork and doing all that shit. But so, you know, fast forward 3 days and I'm doing the stuff I need to do. No, I went and spent 10 minutes doing what I'm supposed to do. Then I went to my camp that I had, I went to go get my things, you know what I mean? Because, you know, living in a tent in the woods, you know, I had a bunch of things that I thought I needed. And so she calls me and she's like, hey, if you're willing to do it, like, we can get you into the NA24. Right now, anybody that doesn't know anything about the NA24, that place saves lives, man. Like, that place is fucking, I mean, that was the beginning of my journey, man. And so, I was getting my things. I told her I have to go get my bike, man. Well, I get out there and my bike's gone. And I was beating around the bush, like, saying I wanted to help, but, like, scared as shit, so it was taking my fucking time. And she ends up picking me up at 7 or 8, and, like, she finally calls me, and she's like, look, where are you at? I'll come get you right now. I'm on my way home. No, where are you right now? And, like, I thank God that I was willing, and I told her, I'm over here. She went out of her fucking way to come get me and took me to NA24, took me home to tell my, you know, like, my grandma had no idea this was happening. I went and I was like, look, Mimi, I'm going to go to rehab. I'm going to go try and get sober, you know. And my grandma, bless her heart, like, she has never given up. None of my family has ever given up on me. Like, even when it looked like I gave up on me, like, I thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Like, but yeah, so we went to my grandma's house and, you know, because like most 35-year-olds have got their shit together. I lived with my grandma. So I went and I packed a bag of clothes and she took me to the NA24. And I got there at like 7 o'clock at night. The next morning I believe I had court. I went to court and as I'm leaving court, you know, like, I went to court not knowing what the hell to expect, knowing that I had just been busted with a whole bunch of dope. I've been to court hundreds of times. Well, maybe not hundreds. I'm an addict. I exaggerate. But a bunch of times. And every time I ever go to court, even after having all this experience going to court, every time I go to court, I think I'm going to jail. And, so I went to court, and I didn't go to jail, and I get out of court, and I get on the bus going back to the NA24, and it was like the first real God moment I had. Like, I get on the bus, and I'm, you know, saying a little prayer, like, thank you, God. And I've always had this issue with God, you know, because for most of my life I thought he killed my mother, you know, and then I every question I ever had about him that I asked any of the holy men, they always say, oh, you don't question it. That's God. You don't question. No, that's not the way my fucking mind works, man. And, but I got on the bus and I was like, thank you, God. And literally as I'm saying the prayer on the side of a building, I see the word proof. And like, come to find out that proof is probably for some whiskey or vodka. But it was the proof that I fucking needed, man. You know, and I went back to the NA24, and like I don't think I was there more than 3 days. And when I finally got a hold of somebody at AR, they're like, well, can you come like this morning, like now? And I was like, oh, so, you know, because everybody that I talked to about getting into AR, it was a thing of you call, you get on the list, it'll be 6 weeks or 2 months or next year, or, you know, and then you call every day and the list whittles down. The first time I talked to anybody, they're like, yeah, we've been waiting on your phone call. And I was like, oh, shit. They were like, yeah, come in today. I was like today? They're like, yeah, like right now. And so I called my cousin, and she picked me up, and I came here, and it was, I've had all this fear in my life of, like, you know, inadequacy or success, or, but, like, when I walked through the doors here, it was like, I felt like this is exactly where I needed to be, and, you know, like, and I came in, and everybody here was like, you know, take a day, assimilate, you know, like, go take a nap. I was like, fuck that, what are we doing? And, you know, like, I mean, I was doing the step classes the day I got here. I was doing I did absolutely everything I could when I was here. And when I got out of here, I got out of here on my fourth step. I went to the South Congress meeting the day I got out of here on Wednesday. Thursday, I went to the South Congress meeting, and I saw the man that would become my sponsor, and I was like, "Hey, can you sponsor me?" You know, like I had no idea how to approach people with being, you know, like. Since then, like I've realized you're kind of like interviewing somebody. Then it was just like I was desperate, like please sponsor me. And he was like, I don't have room. And I was like, oh fuck. Well, can I do my fifth step with you? He's like, wait a second, you're on step four. I was like, yeah. He's like, I'll sponsor you. You know, within 2 weeks of that, like he had gotten me through the steps. Like he was having me raise my hand in meetings to sponsor. Looking back on it. 2.5 months, 3 months sober is maybe not the amount of time you need to be sponsoring people, you know? I mean, I've got a year today, yesterday, and I still feel like I'm learning, you know? Like, I mean, I will not turn somebody down whenever they ask me to sponsor them, but I call my sponsor more in the first couple weeks that I'm sponsoring somebody than I do before any other time because, like, I'm still figuring this shit out, man. So the 12 steps, like, within, I don't know, maybe 2 months of being sober, I'd done the 12 steps. And it was the first time since I've been an adult that I felt something other than just fucking misery, man. Like, you know, I can't explain what it is that I felt. Relief, I guess, would be a good word for it. Like, happy to be, like, part of the human race. You know, like, I don't know. Like, if you'd have told me a year ago that I would be standing in front of you telling my story, like, with a year sober, I would have thought you were fucking nuts. Like, if we were taking bets when I walked in, me and Chris were talking about it the other day, if we were taking bets, I would not have bet on me. Like, I mean, it's just, I mean, my fucking MO was get high. You know, like, if I was happy, get high. If I was sad, get high. If I was celebrating, get high. If I had something bad happen, get high. And, like, now, like, that's not even in my fucking, it's not even on my radar, man. Like, I can't believe it. Like, I know I'm a fucking miracle, you know? I know, like, I am not the one responsible. God is, whatever, you know, I'm still learning on a daily basis what I think God is, you know? I like to think God is in the Bible, but I feel like God is in everything, you know? And I've been trying to go to church more, and some churches that I've gone to, I didn't feel God was in there. Every time I go into an AA meeting, I feel God is in that room, man. Like, I don't know. I got 10 minutes. Do I have to go 10 minutes more? Okay. But yeah, yeah, I don't know. Yes. When I come and do the Wednesday night thing, I made a mistake of telling them that when they get out, they get a wife and a baby in their discharge package. But yeah, so anyway, I'm learning this shit, right? Stuff I've learned. Let's go with that. Stuff I've learned. Being of service will get you out of yourself faster than anything, man. I try and absolutely, I'm friends with the four people that come up here once a week and bring a meeting, and all four of them, if they ask me to come, I don't care if I came last week, I don't care if I came the last 3 weeks, I come every fucking time, man. I missed this meeting, this Sunday night meeting, I think maybe twice in the year that I've been out, you know, and like, now it's relatively easy. I stay like 10 minutes down the road, and I just ask somebody on their way to pick me up. For the first 5 months, I was way north, and I'd have to take a bus, but like, I made it, man. Like, and like, recovery is basically about what you're willing to do and how, you know, like, if you want the fucking, if you want whatever it is that I have, like, I mean, I'm not even sure what it is, but I know it's fucking good. But I know if you want it, you're gonna do whatever the fuck it takes to get it, man. And if you make excuses and you're okay with bullshitting it, you're not gonna get relief, man. You know, like, I know I was very good at basically telling people to fuck off for most of my life. And in the last year, I've gotten very good at taking suggestion, doing what is asked of me, like, doing whatever it takes to fucking help the next person, man. You know, like, I know today, like, I'm able to fucking be there for my girl, be there for my fucking baby, man. Like we made this baby in a shed. Like, and sorry to put you on blast like that, baby. But yeah, we were. But yeah. You're as red as your lipstick right now. But yeah, and you know, we did not have a healthy relationship at that time. And we kind of parted ways for a little while. Hopefully we won't part ways again tonight after that. we went our separate ways, like, you know, like we were two opposite sides of magnets, like being repulsed by each other. And then she told me she was pregnant, and I was very happy, but we never were able to, you know, we were both on the streets, and she was on the streets here, I was on the streets here, and we just could never get back together. And that's one thing that I'm really grateful about here is one day I was walking to art therapy, and she was at the Welcome Center, and I don't know if she knew I was here. I didn't know she was coming here. I feel like that was a God thing, man. Like, God put her in my life, gave me a, you know, and so, you know, we both went through here. Our baby is an alumni through here, you know? Like, I mean, this place is fucking amazing, man. I don't know. That I'm so grateful to be able to stand here and tell you my story. And I think I'm going to close with that.